I reject you, two words. That's all it took to end 4 years of believing. Laura heard them land the way you hear a car accident, not the impact itself, but the silence right after, when the world hasn't decided yet what shape it's going to take. The fire was at her back, 60 pack members in a ring around her, Elder Soren with his hands still raised from the opening blessing, and Marcus Vane standing 10 feet away in the full red light of the blood moon. Looking directly at her with an expression she'd never seen on his face before. Not cruelty, worse, certainty. Before this pack and before the moon, he said, and his voice was the Alpha's voice, even authoritative. Built to carry and land without trembling, I, Marcus Vane, Alpha of Vane's Crossing, formally reject the bond between myself and Laura Ashby. Someone in the crowd exhaled. One sound, quickly swallowed. Then nothing, just the fire and the cold and 60 people holding their breath because they understood, even if she didn't yet, that they were watching something irreversible happen. Laura didn't move. She was aware of her own body the way you're aware of it in emergencies, clinically, from a slight distance, like something fragile someone else is responsible for. Her hands were at her sides. Her jaw was set. The bond was pulling toward him the way it always did when he was close. That deep directional pull she'd felt since she was 17 and had never been able to switch off. And the cruelest part of this moment, the part she would lie awake replaying for weeks, was that it was still pulling. Even now, even while he was doing this, even while he stood there and threw her away in front of everyone she'd ever known. The prophecy is clear, Marcus continued. His green eyes hadn't left her face. She would think about that later, that he looked at her the entire time, that he didn't have the decency to look away. What stands between this pack and its survival cannot be ignored, not even for this. The prophecy. She heard the whisper move through the crowd like wind through grass, knew from the way it traveled too fast. Too practiced, that this wasn't new information to anyone standing in this ring. They'd known. They'd come here tonight already knowing, and no one had warned her. And she had walked into this circle in her good dress thinking tonight was the beginning. The mate bond wrenched. She pressed her palm flat against her sternum without meaning to. And she saw the exact moment Marcus felt it, saw it in the tightening of his jaw, the way his breath changed for exactly 1 second before he locked himself back down. He felt everything she felt. He always had. That was the point of a mate bond. That was the whole brutal point of it. He felt her and he was doing this anyway. Laura Ashby, Elder Soren's voice was not unkind. That almost made it worse. The pack bears witness. The rejection is spoken by Blood Moon law. You are released from, I heard him. Her voice came out lower than she intended. Steadier too, and she didn't know where that came from, some locked room inside herself she'd never had to open before. She was still looking at Marcus. She hadn't stopped looking at him, and she wasn't going to look away first, because he didn't get that. He didn't get to stand there and take everything from her and also make her flinch. I heard him, she said again. He doesn't need to repeat it. Something moved through Marcus's face. Fast, gone. She turned and walked out of the circle. They parted for her, the pack, all 60 of them, stepped back without being asked, made a corridor through the torchlight and let her pass. She walked through it without looking at a single face. Not Petra's, not her cousin Dev's, not the elders or the ranked wolves or anyone who had stood here tonight and said nothing, warned her of nothing. Let her walk into this knowing exactly what was waiting. She walked until the fire was behind her, and the dark was ahead, and the cold hit her face like a flat hand, and she was alone in the trees with the blood moon hanging red and massive overhead. And her hands shaking so badly she had to press them together to make them stop. Fine, they could shake here. No one could see them here. She pressed her back against the first oak she reached and let herself stand there, just stand there. Not moving, not deciding anything yet, the bond stretched behind her toward the firelight. She felt it the way you feel a pulled muscle, constant, low, impossible to ignore. She pressed her palm over it and breathed. In, out, the cold, the pine. The distant sound of the fire. The prophecy is clear. She didn't know what prophecy. She'd never heard of a prophecy. And the fact that Marcus had, that there was apparently a prophecy significant enough to make him reject his fated mate in front. of his entire pack, and she'd been told nothing, given nothing, just walked in and been executed while everyone watched. Her jaw tightened so hard her back teeth ached. She pushed off the tree, got her feet under her, and started toward the pack house, not to confront anyone, not to demand explanations from a man who had just made his position abundantly clear. She was going to collect her things, and she was going to leave. And she was going to do it before anyone could come after her with condolences or careful explanations or the particular pity of people who watched something terrible happen and chose to let it. She had one bag to pack. She'd been living light for years, half unconsciously, the way you live when some part of you always knows you might have to move fast. She used to think that was anxiety. Standing here in the cold with the blood moon on her back and her mate bond pulling toward a man who just publicly severed it, she was starting to think it was something else. She was 20 feet from the pack house steps when she heard him. "Laura," she stopped. She didn't turn around. Marcus's footsteps on the dirt path behind her. She knew the sound of them, knew his gait the way you know someone's voice when you've been paying involuntary attention to them for years. He'd followed her. Of course he had. He just rejected her in front of 60 people and then followed her into the dark because apparently humiliation had a second act. "I don't need an explanation," she said, facing forward. "That's not," he stopped, started again. "You need to know that this wasn't. I need to go inside and get my bag." She turned then because she wasn't going to stand with her back to him like she was afraid of him. She looked at him directly. He was close, closer than she'd expected, 10 feet back on the path with the torchlight behind him making his face hard to read. But she'd spent 4 years reading that face in bad light. "You made your decision. I'm making mine." The muscle in his jaw moved. "Where will you go? That stopped being your question about 45 minutes ago." He took a step forward. She took one back, not from fear, from the bond because the bond was still there, still pulling. And if he got within arm's reach, she was going to feel it, and she refused to feel it right now, refused to let her own body betray her in front of him twice in one night. "The prophecy," he started. "Don't." The word came out quiet and very final. "Don't explain it to me. Don't justify it. I don't care what it says." She held his gaze, and she made sure he could see her face clearly in the moonlight, made sure he could see that she meant this. "Whatever I am in that prophecy, whatever I'm supposed to destroy, it's already done." She watched that land. Then she turned and went up the steps and into the pack house, and she did not look at his face again. She was packed in 11 minutes. She was out the back door in 12. She crossed the pack border as the moon reached its peak, red and full and completely indifferent, and the bond stretched with her, pulled thin and burning, and she did not stop. She was 2 miles past the marker, moving east through old-growth forest with the cold pressing in and her breath fogging the dark ahead of her when the first wolf appeared. A big male, silver-gray, old through the muzzle. Standing dead center on the path ahead of her like he'd been waiting, Laura's hand went to the blade at her hip. The wolf didn't move, didn't bare its teeth. It looked at her with amber eyes that held something she'd never seen in a wild wolf's face, something almost deliberate. Then it lowered its massive head slowly, steadily, all the way to its forepaws, a bow. Laura stood there in the dark with her bag on her back and her hand on her knife and the blood moon overhead. And she stared at a wild wolf bowing to her on an empty forest path and felt something shift under her sternum that had nothing to do with the mate bond, something older, something that had apparently been waiting for her to start running. Before we continue with the story, please take 2 seconds to subscribe to the channel. It will really go a long way for me. Thank you. Chapter 2. She kept walking. The wolf fell into step 20 feet behind her, not following like a threat. Following like a shadow, like something that had decided she was its direction now. She told herself not to read into it. She told herself a lot of things in those first few miles, that she had a plan, that she knew where she was going. That the burning feeling spreading up her left forearm was from the cold. It wasn't from the cold. She stopped under a ridge and pushed back her sleeve and looked at it. A mark. Not a bruise, not anything she'd done to herself. Lines and angles. Dark against her skin, complex and precise the way nothing that grew naturally on skin was precise. She pressed her thumb against it and felt warmth radiating from beneath the surface like a coal buried just out of reach. She pulled her sleeve back down. The wolf sat behind her and waited. "I don't know what you want," she told it. It blinked. She kept walking. The old man was sitting on a fallen log at the edge of a creek crossing at mile 7. And the specific quality of his stillness. The way he held himself, upright, hands visible, the posture of someone who has been trained to approach difficult things without triggering them, told her he'd been waiting for her specifically. Not just anyone moving through the dark, her. She stopped 6 feet away with the creek between them. "You're not surprised," he said. "I'm extremely surprised," she said. "I'm just not running." Something like approval moved across his weathered face. He was old, deep-set lines, white close-cropped hair, a scar along his jaw that had been made deliberately by something deliberate. He reached into his collar and pulled out a pendant. Iron. Worn smooth, and the shape on it matched the shape on her forearm so exactly that her stomach dropped. She kept her face even. "My name is Aldrich Cole," he said. "For the past 23 years, I've been looking for you." He tucked the pendant away. "More accurately, I've been looking for your mother's daughter. I didn't know your name until 6 months ago. My mother died when I was an infant. Her name was Saren." His voice didn't waver. But something behind it did something old and not yet finished grieving. "She was the last queen of the old bloodline. She didn't die in a car accident, Laura. She ran. She hid you. And 11 months later, they found her." The creek ran cold between them. "Who found her?" Laura said. Aldrich looked at her steadily. "The same family who just had you publicly rejected and expelled from the most powerful pack in the Eastern Territory." He paused. "The Vaynes have been cleaning up bloodline traces for 23 years. Your mother was the last queen. You're the heir." He glanced at her forearm. "The seal has been waking up since your 21st birthday. That's what put you on their radar. That's why the prophecy was written." The word arrived like a second rejection. She felt it in the same place. "Marcus didn't know," she said, and hated that her first instinct was to say it. Hated that even now. 6 miles past the border with her bag on her back and his voice still in her chest, "I reject you," her first instinct was to give him the benefit of something. "He didn't know who wrote it," Aldrich said. "That doesn't mean he made the right choice." "No," Laura said, "it doesn't." She looked at the pendant outline beneath his collar. "What does the seal mean?" "It means there are wolves who have been waiting for you for 23 years. He stood slowly. The way old soldiers stand, deliberate, no wasted motion. "There's a shelter east of here. I have documents. Letters your mother wrote before the end. Evidence of who commissioned the prophecy and who delivered it to Vaynes Crossing." He met her eyes. 3 days east is Ashenwood. The old line wolves who swore to your mother are still there. When you present the seal, they'll want me to take the throne. They'll want you to reclaim what was taken from you. He held her gaze. "Those aren't the same thing. You get to decide what you do with it." Laura looked at the mark burning quietly under her sleeve. She thought about the wolf that was still sitting behind her on the bank, patient as gravity. She thought about a red-lit circle and a voice saying, "I reject you," in front of everyone she'd ever known. She looked at Aldrich Cole. "How far is the shelter?" She smelled him before she heard him. They were inside, the shelter warm from the fire Aldrich had built. The documents spread across the rough table between them, Laura 3 letters deep into her mother's handwriting, when the scent hit her. Pine resin and cold night air, and something beneath both that her nervous system had been filing under home since she was 17, and she set the letter down slowly and looked at the door. It opened. Marcus filled the frame with the specific, controlled stillness of a man who had been running for hours and was imposing discipline over every external sign of it. His dark hair was pushed back. His jaw was set. His green eyes swept the room, Aldrich. The documents, the letters, and landed on Laura and stayed. He'd followed the bond. She'd known, somewhere low and not quite conscious, that he would, that the bond wouldn't let him do otherwise. She'd been waiting for it without admitting she was waiting, which was its own particular kind of betrayal, her own body still hoping, even now, even after. "How did you find?" she started. "Don't." His voice was rough, not the alpha's voice. Something underneath it. You know how, she did know. The same way she'd have found him, the pull, directional and relentless, the compass that never stopped pointing. You don't get to follow me, she said. I know. He didn't move from the doorway. His eyes went to the table, the documents, the seal records, the letters in her mother's handwriting, and she watched his face change as he registered what he was looking at. The frown deepened. What is all of this? Sit down, Aldrich said. I'm not. Sit down, Alpha Vane. The old soldier's voice had the quality of someone who had once commanded people who mattered. What you're about to hear changes everything you think you know, including what your family has been doing for 23 years. The silence that followed was the kind that has weight. Marcus walked in, sat in the second chair, the one across the table from Laura. Close enough that she could feel the cold still coming off him, close enough that the bond hummed loud and constant, and she had to work to breathe evenly over the top of it. She slid the farthest document toward him without speaking. She watched his face as he read it. She watched him read it again. She watched the moment it landed, the moment he reached the section that named the forger, that named the family. That detailed in dry archival language, the commissioning of a prophecy designed to isolate the bloodline heir by severing her from pack protection at the critical moment of activation. She watched his face go very still in the way faces go still when something has happened to them that they don't yet have a shape for. He set the document down. He stared at the table. My father, he said, not a question. The voice of someone reading words off the inside of their own skull. Your father gave the order, Aldrich said. The messenger was his man. The prophecy was written 18 months ago, timed for your first blood moon ceremony as Alpha. A pause. You were given a forgery and told it came from the moon elders. You believed it because it was built specifically for you to believe. Marcus's jaw was tight enough that she could see it. He looked at Laura. She let him look. She gave him nothing. Because everything she had right now was needed somewhere else, and she couldn't afford to spend it on the expression on his face, however real it was, however much the bond was pressing her toward it. Laura, her name in his mouth. Without the ceremony, without the Alpha's voice, just her name, raw and direct. I didn't know. I know you didn't know, she held his gaze steadily. You were lied to by your father, by people you trusted. She paused. And when you had a choice between believing a prophecy and trusting your own mate, you chose the prophecy. Another pause, shorter. I understand why. That doesn't mean I'm not standing here. He absorbed that. The fire burned low. Outside. The silver wolf that had been following Laura moved through the dark near the shelter's single window, and Marcus tracked the motion automatically, a predator's reflex, then went still when he understood what he was seeing. That wolf has been following you since the border, he said. Yes, it bowed to you. Yes. He looked at her mark. Her sleeve had pushed up slightly when she'd been reading, and the seal was fully visible now, dark and precise and undeniable. She watched him look at it, watched him put things together in real time. They're going to come for her, Aldrich said. The consortium. When the bloodline fully activates, they'll move. She needs to reach Ashenwood in 3 days. He looked at Marcus. The question is what you intend to do about the mistake you made last night. I'm not leaving, Marcus said. He wasn't looking at Aldrich. You don't have a vote, Laura said. I have 37 trained wolves who'll be at the border by morning if I call them. His voice was quiet. Not a threat, a fact, delivered to the surface of the table. The consortium has people everywhere between here and Ashenwood. You won't make it alone. He looked at her then, fully, with nothing behind it except the thing she'd spent 4 years watching him contain. I know what I did. I know I can't undo it. I'm not asking you to forgive me tonight. I'm asking you to let me walk next to you. The fire crackled. Laura looked at her mother's letters stacked at the edge of the table. Thought about a woman who had run alone and hidden alone and died alone because there'd been no one left to stand next to her. You sleep outside, she said. The silence that followed had a shape, not comfortable, not resolved, but real in the way that only things that cost something are real. Fine, Marcus said. She picked up the next letter. Outside, the silver wolf settled against the shelter wall like it had always planned to spend the night there. And on the back of the last document in the stack, the one Aldrich hadn't opened yet, The one still face down at the bottom of the pile was a name neither of them had seen yet. The name of who had given the Vane family the bloodline's location in the first place. The name of who had told them where Saren was hiding. It was a name Laura knew. Chapter 3. She found it at midnight. Aldrich was asleep in the corner with the practiced efficiency of a man who'd spent decades sleeping in worse places. Marcus was outside. She could feel him through the thin shelter wall. That particular pressure of someone sitting against the other side of wood, close and awake and not going anywhere. The bond hummed with his proximity. She'd stopped trying to turn it down. She'd been reading through her mother's letters one by one. Slowly, learning a woman she'd never gotten to know, and in the second to last letter, tucked between a passage about hiding and a passage about fear, was the line. If they find us, it won't be the Vanes who gave us away. Myra knows where we are. I trusted her with your location before I understood what she'd already done. Laura sat very still. Myra. The name was ordinary. The name was nothing. Except that Laura only knew one Myra, had only ever known one Myra, and that was Myra Ashby. Her aunt, the woman who had raised her from infancy after her mother died, who had brought her into Vane's Crossing, who had been the first person to tell her about mate bonds and pack loyalty, and all the things Laura had grown up believing were. Simply the shape of her life. The woman who had placed her, deliberately, in the pack controlled by the family that had commissioned her mother's death. Laura set the letter down. She pressed both hands flat on the table and looked at the wall and breathed. In, out, the fire, the cold seeping under the door, Marcus, awake and still on the other side of the wood. She picked up the letter again, read the rest of it. Her mother's handwriting got faster toward the end, less controlled, the pen pressing harder. I don't know if this reaches you. I don't know if there's a you to reach yet. But if there is, if you're reading this, then something went wrong and you need to know that the people who knew where to find me were not strangers. A pause in the pen. She could see it, the break, the gathering. The people who knew were the ones I loved. Be smarter than I was. Trust the mark. Trust the wolves who bow. Don't trust the ones who raised you. The last line. The throne isn't what they're afraid of you taking. It's the truth about how they took it. Laura folded the letter. She picked up the document at the bottom of the stack, the one she'd left for last, face down, and turned it over. The name was there, in the same dry archival hand as the rest of the consortium's records. Primary informant, Saren Ashby's location, year one, Myra Ashby. Compensation, relocation of Myra Ashby's debts, permanent consortium protection, placement of bloodline heir in Vane's Crossing for monitoring. Monitoring, not for Laura's benefit. For theirs, 23 years of watching her grow up in the right place, within reach, so they'd know the exact moment the seal activated and have her close enough to contain. Her whole life. Engineered. The door opened. She hadn't called him. But Marcus came in the way the bond pulled him in, some shift in her, that he felt through the wall and through the wood, and through whatever distance was supposed to exist between them now. And he crossed the room in four steps and crouched beside her chair and looked at her face. He didn't touch her. She registered that. He came that close and he stopped and waited with his hands open at his sides. What happened? He said, quiet, the Natalfa voice. She turned the document toward him. She watched him read it. She watched his face do the thing faces do when two separate betrayals locate each other and realize they're the same betrayal. The consortium, his father, her aunt, the prophecy. Laura placed in Vane's Crossing like a piece on a board, all of it the same long hand moving the same pieces. Myra is still in the pack house, he said. His voice had gone very quiet, very controlled. Yes, she has no idea you found this. No. He looked at her. She raised you. She sold my mother. The fire was almost down to coals now. In the corner, Aldrich's breathing was slow and even. Laura looked at Marcus's face, at the 12 inches of air between them and the way the bond lived in that 12 inches, warm and real and completely unresolved. And she thought about what her mother had written. Don't trust the ones who raised you. She'll warn them, Laura said. When she realizes I left with the documents, when she realizes what I know, she'll warn the consortium that I'm heading for Ashenwood. I know. They'll move faster. I know. Marcus's jaw was tight. I have people I trust, wolves my father never got to. I can have them hold Myra at the pack house without tipping anything until we're through the Ashenwood border. He held her gaze. With your permission. Laura registered the phrase, with your permission, from an alpha about his own pack. She nodded once. He stood and moved to the doorway and made one brief, low call into the dark, a signal that traveled as pack communication, not sound. Then he came back and sat in the second chair and looked at the dying fire and said nothing. Laura looked at her mother's letters in a stack, thought about a woman who trusted wrong and ran alone and didn't make it. She didn't leave me any pictures. Laura said she hadn't meant to say it, it just came out. Marcus turned his head. My mother, Myra never had any pictures of her, I used to ask. She kept her eyes on the letters. Myra always said the accident destroyed everything. That there was nothing left to give me, she paused. She was careful, wasn't she? Every detail covered. Yes, Marcus said. With the controlled quietness of someone choosing not to say what they actually want to say because this isn't their grief to lead. Laura picked up the first letter, put it on top of the stack, her mother's handwriting on the front. Neat and deliberate, the hand of a woman who had known she was writing to someone she'd never meet. I look like her, she said. It wasn't a question. She'd found a seal record with a physical description. The records say I look exactly like her. Yes, Marcus said. She looked at him. You knew about the royal bloodline. A pause, the kind that means yes, but not all of it. My father mentioned an old bloodline, extinct, he said. His jaw worked. He mentioned it once when I was 16. I didn't know what it meant. I didn't think about it again until he stopped. Until the prophecy, she said. Until the prophecy mentioned an heir. He held her gaze. At the time, I thought it was mythology. I thought the prophecy was warning me about something theoretical. He paused. I didn't know it was warning me about you specifically. I didn't know it was written to aim me at you specifically. Would it have changed anything? She asked. If you'd known, he was quiet for a long time. I would have asked different questions, he said. I would have come to you first, instead of, he stopped himself. Instead of announcing it in front of 60 people, she said. Yes. The fire went to coals. The shelter got darker, warmer, closer. There's no way to walk that back, Laura said. I know. Public rejection under Blood Moon law is permanent on the pack record. Whatever happens at Ashenwood, whatever I reclaim, that record exists. I know that, too. His eyes didn't move from hers. I'm not asking you to pretend it didn't happen. I'm asking you to let me be useful. The bond between them was almost audible in the silence. She felt it, he felt it, and both of them were choosing, carefully, not to name it. Get some sleep, she said. We move at first light. He nodded. He didn't go back outside. He stayed in the chair, at the table, 3 feet away from her in the dying firelight, and Laura picked up her mother's next letter and read it, and didn't tell him to leave. Outside, 3 more silver wolves had joined the first. They arranged themselves around the shelter's perimeter without a sound, not guarding against something yet, waiting for something. Chapter 4. She felt it at dawn. Not the wolves, she'd grown used to the wolves, the weight of their attention, the specific quality of deference in how they held themselves around her. She'd grown used to the mark on her forearm, cycling through warmth and cool as the night moved. She'd grown used, even, to the particular shape of Marcus's breathing a few feet away. The involuntary awareness of him that the bond installed and she couldn't uninstall. What she felt at dawn was different. A pressure from the east. Not physical, something deeper, something beneath physical. The way a sound below hearing still moves the chest. Her eyes opened before she understood she'd fallen asleep in the chair, the letters in her lap, the fire dead to gray ash. Marcus was already awake, upright in his chair, eyes on the door. The quiet, alert stillness of someone who felt it too. How long have you been feeling that? She said. About 10 minutes, he glanced at her. You slept 3 hours. So did you. I don't need 3 hours, Marcus, I can tell from your face. His mouth closed. Something moved in his eyes briefly, not quite amusement, the ghost of it, the place where amusement would be if they were anywhere else and anything else. Gone as fast as it came. Aldrich was already up, moving. The trunk locked and the documents bundled and his coat on. They crossed the eastern marker 40 minutes ago, he said, not looking up. 8 consortium wolves, moving fast. He picked up his pack. We needed to leave 20 minutes ago. Laura was on her feet. The next 7 minutes were efficient and wordless. Marcus outside making the call to his wolves in veins crossing, low and brief. Aldrich distributing the document bundle between 3 separate packs. Laura tying her mother's letters against her body, close under her jacket, against the warmth of the mark. She was at the door when Marcus caught up. East trail forks at the ridge, he said. Consortium will expect the lower fork, it's faster. We take the high route. Adds 40 minutes, but it comes out at Ashenwood's back border, which is guarded by old line wolves they can't move through. He said it to her, not to Aldrich, not to the air, to her directly. Like someone who has recalibrated who they're taking orders from. She noted that. High route, she said. Go, they moved. The forest was different in the early gray light, older, the trees wider, the canopy heavy overhead. Their footsteps were quiet on deep pine duff. Marcus ran point without being asked, dropping into the Alpha's operational mode, scanning continuously, and Laura ran behind him and was aware. With the specific clarity of a body in motion processing multiple things at once, of the bond pulling forward toward him and pulling east toward the mark's destination at the same time, 2 separate directions inside her chest, both insistent. Neither willing to be ranked, she'd have to deal with that eventually. Not yet. The consortium wolves hit them at the ridge. Not 8-4, which meant the other 4 were coming from a different angle. And Marcus pulled left before Laura could call it, putting his body between her and the direction they'd come from. She registered this without softening toward it. He was protecting her. That didn't fix anything. But she noted his position and moved with it because they were moving, and she wasn't an idiot. The fight was short and brutal and specific. Pack wolves who knew what they were doing, consortium wolves who'd been briefed on a target. And the gap between them that opened when Laura's mark blazed hot, and the 4 old line wolves from Ashenwood's border hit the clearing from the east like they'd been waiting for exactly this signal. She didn't use the mark deliberately. She didn't know how yet, but it used something in the moment of real threat. She felt it release from her forearm and felt it move through the clearing the way heat moves, invisible and physical, and she watched 4 consortium wolves stop. Not freeze, stop, the way something stops when it recognizes something above its authority. 2 of them ran. The fight ended in under a minute. Laura stood in the clearing with her blade out and her breathing controlled, and the mark fading back to warm, and Marcus was looking at her with an expression she'd never seen on his face before. Not the controlled Alpha's face. Not the grief already finished face from the fire circle, something that had no composure in it at all. Did you know you could do that? He said. No, he held her gaze. I know, she said before he could speak. Don't, he closed his mouth. Aldrich was already moving toward the Ashenwood wolves, greeting them, low and urgent, the recognition of people who have been waiting on the same side for a very long time. Laura resheathed her blade and looked east. Toward the forest break where she could see, just barely, through the trees, the structures of a settlement. Stone and timber, flags she didn't know, wolves moving in the early morning like it was ordinary. Like it had been waiting for exactly her to arrive and make it extraordinary. She felt Marcus come up beside her, not behind her, beside her, even with her left shoulder. Close enough that the bond settled into something like silence for the first time in 20 hours. Like it recognized the configuration. Like it had been trying to achieve this specific arrangement and had temporarily gotten what it wanted. She didn't move away from it. When we cross that border, she said, everything changes. Yes, Marcus said, for you too. You follow me in there, you stand next to me in front of those wolves, your pack is bound to what I am. Whether they voted for it or not, I know. I'm not asking for your protection, I'm telling you what you're agreeing to. Laura, his voice, her name, no ceremony in it. Nothing performed, just the stripped-down version of a man who has run 4 hours through dark forest and watched his whole history rewrite itself in a stone shelter and is standing here anyway. I know what I'm agreeing to. She looked at him. Looked at the expression that had no composure left in it, You don't get to decide we're okay, she said. That's not something you get to decide by showing up. I know that too. Then why are you still here? He was quiet for a moment. The Ashenwood wolves behind them, Aldrich's voice, low and carrying, the first pale light hitting the tops of the trees. Because you're about to walk into a settlement full of wolves who have been waiting 23 years for you, Marcus said. And when you walk in there and they tell you what you are, when it's real and it's witnessed and there's no taking it back, I want to be standing next to you. A pause. Not because you need me there, because I need to be. The bond was very loud. She looked at the settlement. Walk behind me, she said, until I say otherwise. Understood. She walked forward. The old line wolves saw her at the tree line and one by one they stopped, whatever they were doing, wherever they were standing. They turned toward her and the silence moved through them like a wave, and before she'd taken 20 steps into the settlement, every wolf in the clearing had bowed. Not quickly, not in the practiced way of ceremony. Slowly. Like something lowering itself before something it has waited a very long time to see. Laura walked through it with her mother's letters pressed against her chest, and the mark burning fully open on her arm, and Marcus Vane 3 steps behind her. And she did not let herself feel it yet, the magnitude of it, the shape of what was happening, the thing she was becoming. She would feel it later, in the back of the settlement. Past the bowed wolves and the stone buildings and the flag she was already starting to recognize, an old woman stood in an open doorway with her arms loose at her sides and her eyes sharp and present. She looked at Laura the way someone looks when they've been holding a specific face in their memory for 23 years and are now checking it against the real thing. Then she said, "She has her mother's mark. She has her mother's walk." Her eyes moved briefly to Marcus behind Laura, then back. She has better sense than her mother in at least one way. "How do you figure?" Laura said. "Your mother," the old woman said. "Let the people who hurt her stand in front of her." Her eyes settled on Laura's face with the weight of someone delivering something long prepared. You made yours walk behind you. Laura held the woman's gaze. Somewhere behind her, she felt Marcus absorb that. My name is Laura Ashby, she said. My mother was Saren, and I want to see everything. The old woman stepped back from the doorway. Then come in, Your Grace, she said. We've been waiting long enough. Laura crossed the threshold. The mark on her arm blazed once, white, bright, and absolute, and then settled to a steady, constant warmth. Like something that had been searching had finally found the place it was always supposed to be.